know, I just fell down. I blacked out, fell down. And you know, when I woke up, it's a pool of blood on the floor. Pretty sure my nose is broken, but.
All of that occurred away from the action, and Gene Katie just a little upset with what's happened so far.
Robinson around Ostertag, over him.
Turn around, knocking it down again is Jawan Johnson, 3 for 3 from the field.
You're listening to the Purdue Basketball Beat, a part of the Boiled Sports Podcast Network.
Hello and welcome to the Purdue Basketball Beat. It's been quite a long time since our last podcast. Here with me is Anish, and we just got a text from Andy like 2 seconds ago with a last minute cancel.
Never reliable, that man.
I mean, I'm just saying.
Never, never.
It's hurtful. I'm not mad, I'm hurt.
I'm mad.
You be mad, I'm hurt. My feelings are hurt. We're going to have to sit down and have a talk. Dear Andy, when you cancel on me at the last second, it makes me feel like you don't value me.
You sound like a D'Angelo album.
Maybe that's what I'll listen to. I'll turn off all the lights, put on D'Angelo, and just have a good cry.
Did you listen to the new one? That was really good, man.
It took him long enough.
Yeah, I know. I mean, he was working on it for like, what, 20 years?
He's like him and Tool. That's the one thing that those two artists have in common. They each take 8 years to make an album.
What's the Chinese democracy joke? Is that Guns N' Roses?
Yeah, that's Guns N' Roses. Okay. Except when D'Angelo and Tool make an album every 8 years, it's usually pretty awesome. When Chinese democracy was like watching a dog take a shit.
Man, shout out to Axl Rose and his cornrows.
Shout out to Fat Axl, by the way. I love it. Like way to just not care anymore, you know?
No, he's really committed to his look, to his entire shtick. Mm-hmm. You know, more power to him, I guess. So
the question is he fat because he's on drugs or fat because he's no longer on drugs?
So is he oh man, I was about to say, is he Elvis fat or is he Jared Fogel fat? But I think I think let's not go there.
Bad timing for the Fogel joke.
Sorry.
It's been a rough week for Jared.
No comment on the Fogel.
No comment on the Fogel.
No comment. Shout out Indiana. Shout out to Zionsville.
Yeah. No, I think his fatness means that he stopped doing cocaine and started smoking pot again.
Good. I think that's the preferable state, right? Like
If you were to choose booze and pot over coke and whatever else he was doing back in the day.
I guess booze and pot isn't too far from my existence, but that's a joke. That's a joke,
That joke will not make the final.
I can't guarantee I will cut it, but speaking of people whose hair I am completely jealous of,
mm-hmm.
Caleb Swanigan.
Of course.
Yeah. Now, wait. Let's just do an outline here because I'll write this on the interweb. So what we're planning on doing is about like 20, 25 minutes of Swanigan. We'll do Team USA and a little preview of next year, but we'll try to keep it just Team USA focused. Maybe do some Vince Edwards and Isaac Haas doing Team USA related things.
It wouldn't be a podcast with you if we somehow didn't talk about Vince Edwards.
That's right. But then we will transition into NBA and we'll do like 10 minutes of like general NBA thoughts. Cause I feel like we're both NBA fans and the rest of Boiled Sports isn't. I can't really speak to Andy. I think he's an NBA fan just generally.
But Dowd and Justin are just not really, you know, now we should probably just publish our email thread. Well, a heavily edited version of our email.
That's right. So Dowd is staunchly anti. I am staunchly for. Yeah. And like I feel like you and Jay are like the middle. Like, you know, you're the, you know, conservative liberal and he's the liberal conservative. You know what I mean? Like you're kind of like in the middle leaning one way or another.
So like, I'm actually like pretty hardcore, but I keep it under wraps a little bit.
Okay, I can't. I have no under wraps power.
I'm super negative when it comes to the pace.
We'll get into it. Anyway,
talk about Caleb Swanigan's haircut. By the way, let me just say, This will mark the second time that we've discussed Caleb's fashion choices on our podcast.
I think it was on Twitter last time.
Was it on Twitter?
Or like on emails or something like that. Like, I think it was before he committed. If you look on YouTube, like there's an interview with him, and he's in this like sharp V-neck. Like, it'd be a crew neck, but it's a V. It's like a sharp V, so no chest, none of that classlessness.
Right.
And then he had the man bun.
He
had his blowout. Like, you know, his vertical blowout that he usually does for the games, but he had it in a man bun and he had these like sophisticated glasses. And I was like, this is a young man that's going to run for president one day.
It looked, I would have voted for him.
He's amazing. He looks on the court. This might be an obscure reference. He looks like Captain Kirk from The Roots. Like the dude who plays the guitar in The Roots, like with the hair. You should watch them do a Beastie Boys song. I think it's Sabotage, and he's tremendous, and he looks like a psychopath, and it makes me think of Caleb Swanigan on the court. It's amazing, except this dude weighs maybe 150 pounds, and Caleb Swanigan's left shoulder weighs 150 pounds.
Very true.
Yes.
No, but I do appreciate the blowout.
It's fantastic. It's a great look.
Fashionable.
If you go to Team
Unfashionable.
If you go to Team USA's the under 19 page and they have like each of the pictures of everyone on there, Swanigan's got like these the blowout, like just in full form, mutton chops and the chin goatee.
Mm-hmm.
And it's amazing. 10 out of 10. I love it.
I'm with you. It's a good look.
Everybody else here, like everybody else kind of look, actually no, the blowout's coming back into style. Like all the Duke kids had it. Mm-hmm. Like Okafor,
Winslow's look, right?
Yeah, I'm digging Justice Winslow's look. Yeah, he almost fell to the Pacers anyway. So yeah, let's move on. But Swanigan looked really good, like in everything until the championship game. He looked really good, and he had like a on a roster full of some of the most talented. I think maybe the most talented under 19 roster that the USA has had in a while.
Yeah.
Like, and it looks like what the 2016 draft or 2017 draft class is going to be just stacked. I mean, he held his own, and he was one of the one of the people who stood out on there. What do you think? You saw a little more of the tournament than I did. So, what do you think?
I don't, from a scoring perspective, he I don't think he really stood out as much. I think he had. He played pretty good defense, and he did a decent job rebounding. Mm-hmm. I mean, he was I think his minutes were much more varied than I was expecting.
Yeah, and they were controlled, too. So if you look at it, he was middle of the pack, and his totals or his averages were around, just basically the middle of everybody on the team, but his minutes were significantly lower than, the top half. So I think his, if you were to do a per 40 or per 36, his stats would be great. But I just think, especially in the championship against Croatia, see, that's one of the concerns I have, is that against Croatia, they were going small ball. They were going four out, four and a half out. Basically their center was almost, floating on the perimeter too. So that kind of rendered Swanigan a little bit obsolete, which is what I'm afraid of, is that we're doubling down on size when at least at the NBA level, it looks like it's trending towards, having four, like at least four out and then one in.
See, I think that's less of an issue at the college level because
I think you're right.
College teams don't have the skill to really hurt you with small ball.
Mm-hmm. Right?
You know, in the NBA, everyone can shoot. Right. Everyone can do three things, right? Do three things.
Mm-hmm.
And in college, like, there are teams that have starters that can't really even do one thing. So doubling down on size is okay, especially if Swanigan continues to improve his mid-range game. Mm-hmm. Which is another thing that's leaving the NBA game, but for reasons that are statistically significant, right? Like an NBA player can hit a three pointer as just as easy as they can hit.
Yeah, I mean, it's just you get skilled. You're literally taking the best, 10% of the 400 players in the NCAA every year, putting them in the NBA, and yeah. You know what percentage of those actually make it. You know, so I think the skill level once you get to the NBA is really high. But the mid range is going to be pretty important in college, especially facilitating for Purdue. Like, you know, odds are we're not going to have a pure point guard on the floor at all times. In fact, I think we'll like have more lineups without a pure point guard than we will with. So Swanigan, Edwards, Davis, those kind of players who can facilitate, but not necessarily be, you know, quote point guard, are incredibly important. I think that's where he was shining a little bit. And also he played a little closer to the basket in Team USA than I think we're expecting him to play alongside Haas and Hammonds. And that's just because of necessity. There really isn't another. Onwuaku was another like low post threat, but really there weren't. It was mostly wings. Also, Harry Giles, man, that kid is going to be a stud when he gets to the pros. He's like 6'10" wing, just unbelievable. But yeah, like most of it is like perimeter talent. So that's the other thing is guys at Golden Black were talking about it too, was that he adapts really well. Like he adapts to any situation really well. He's, you know, he may or may not be the most talented and the centerpiece of every team like this Team USA team, but he always does like whatever is necessary and his teams always win.
Yeah.
So I mean, that's coming into a team that is a little bit established. I don't know how established we can say, but you know, coming into a team that has chemistry, that has a flow to it, I think that's kind of a good omen, is that he can fit in really well, you know, wherever he is, and he's going to be featured more at Purdue. So you would think that he's going to thrive a little bit.
Well, and established, I don't know about established, but maybe there's not going to be a ton of pressure on him to produce. Mm-hmm. A lot from day one. I mean, he'll start from day one. He'll probably start every game, but no one is counting on him being the leading scorer or anything. You know, he's just got to – they'll run the offense through him, and but there's not going to be, like, a lot of pressure for him to put up, like, 15 and 10 every game.
For sure.
So that gives him a chance to polish some of his away from the basket skills that he already has a good start on. So,
yeah, and I think he's – his footwork is so good. His footwork, his ball handling is already so good that, and his stroke looks great.
He's a great passer.
Oh yeah,
I mean,
just really smart. A really smart player. Like, and you don't usually see that coming out of high school. And that's probably his biggest, you know, attribute, is that, you know, his adaptability and his high IQ, like uncommonly high basketball IQ, even compared to other people on the Team USA team.
Well, in his work ethic, and that's a part of working with Barnes for the last 3 years, but you know, his fellow USA basketball teammates were talking about how he was a beast.
Yeah.
Now, and this was a thing that, you know, you can kind of enjoy the trip if you wanted to, you know?
Yeah. And I think there were concerns coming into, you know, his senior year of, you know, his work ethic. I mean, and it's going to be there when a kid is 6'9" and 350. There's going to be concerns about work ethic based on, you know, do you want to lose weight? Do you want to get in shape? Will you, you know, be in shape by the time, you know, or to play along with other, you know, high level talent, some of the highest level talent, in the world in your age bracket. And, you know, Golden Black did another really great spotlight of both his teammates and his coaches, his trainers. Mm-hmm. You know, his teammates seem to be just enjoying Greece and stuff, like, you know, going seeing stuff. I mean, you're a 17-year-old or an 18-year-old in Greece. Like, that's awesome. But apparently, like, every night, like all Swanigan was doing whenever they had any time off was training with the trainer. And that's super exciting. That's awesome. I'm so excited.
He's going to be good.
Yeah. I
look forward to at least 2 years of him.
I'm going to get bit in the ass for this one, but just based on everything we see, it's so hard to see him have a low floor, you know, like it's so hard to see him bust. Like he might not be as great as we're hoping that he is, even after 2 years. Like, you know, he might pan out to be a late first rounder, early second rounder or whatever. But it's really hard for me to see a situation where he's just like a non-injury situation, where he's just like a failure, like abject, like Josh Selby type number one player in the country, but like flames out type failure.
Yeah, Josh Selby.
They were running, I think CBS Sports did a re-ranking of the 2010 class, and like Kyrie was there and a bunch of talent was there. And I was like, who's the number one in the, and Josh Selby. Shout out to Josh Selby.
Shout out to Josh Selby. He's in Israel, apparently. Wow.
Is that real?
Oh, man.
I know.
2 years in Memphis, and then it was D-League, China, Croatia,
man.
Israel.
It's crazy.
And he was the Big Ten Freshman of the Year, apparently. Dang.
See, his life comes at you fast, man.
No kidding.
Jalen Brunson. Going to Villanova, he said he can do anything you ask. Oh, Swanigan, he said he can do anything you ask him to. He can get a bucket at any time in the low post. No one is physically able to box him out. The sky's the limit for Caleb. Harry Giles, who is the best team or the best player on the team, probably would be the number one pick in 2017 in a stacked 2017 class. Wow. He's a beast. He's a bully, a steel bully. It just looks like he, you know, Hammonds took 2 years to learn how to use his size, really, and learn how to bully people inside. And you can argue he didn't really take advantage of that until Big Ten season this year. So 2.5 years into his career, it looks like Swanigan has no problem, you know, being a beast inside, and he's got touch, you know, on the outside. Things I'm concerned with is that, you know, his side-to-side mobility. In the little bit I watched I watched most like 90% of the semifinal game. And then while he was in the Croatia game, man, it just looked like against some of these faster lineups, some of these quicker lineups, he really struggled to stay in front of his defender. His length helps. I mean, his length helps on defense, but you know, it's still an immediate concern, you know, especially if we're going to play man and switch on everything, if we're going to continue to switch on everything to see if he can, you know, stay with perimeter players that are a little quicker.
You know, he just has to, if we switch everything, he just has to not do. So love Travis Carroll. He was terrible at defending the pick and roll.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because he didn't have any sort of quickness and would always get behind and would either get burnt on the dump or blown by.
Yeah.
So as long as Swanigan can use his length and his footwork to, you know, prevent a Matador-esque cut to the basket,
yeah,
then I think it'll be fine, especially when he's got Haas and Hammonds backing him. So
that's the biggest thing, yeah.
Colander out there.
Right? Yeah, that's the biggest thing, is having someone like Hammonds behind him. That's the biggest thing for anybody, is that, you know, you can be super aggressive when you have AJ Hammonds behind you. You don't really have to worry. But you know, we'll see. He's a freshman. He's going to have things that he's going to need to improve on. I don't think he's ever going to be quick. Like, I don't think we'll ever be describing, you know, him first based on his quickness. It's going to be his skill and his strength. But you know, and his footwork, and if he can, you know, if he can leverage all that, and what's he's got a 7'1", 7'2" wingspan, you know, being, you know, 6'10" on stilts, you know, 6'10" in really tall platform shoes.
Tom Cruise lifts.
They listed both him and Edwards at 6'9", I thought.
Yeah, Edwards isn't 6'9".
Yeah, that, I mean, that was weird. But then, is, does that mean Swanigan's not 6'9"? You know what I mean? Like, does that mean Swanigan is as tall as Edwards? So,
I've know, always heard 6'6". Swanigan was a hair under 6'9".
Yeah.
And Edwards was a hair under 6'8". But, I, you know, a kid, maybe he grew, you know. Maybe now that would be great.
By the time he, by the time Vince graduates, he's going to be like this 7-foot freak of nature.
All right, calm down. We're moving on to the NBA.
Well, so the other two things are Haas is doing like the eight, I think it's the 18 team, or not 18, but he's doing the other. I feel like it's the B squad, but like it's the other, like the not. Like highest level of competition. Like this is the highest level world championship team. He's doing like the FIBA equivalent Haas is trying out for. He's getting pretty good feedback from it, I thought. And it's always good to have exposure, you know, international exposure and exposure with other like super talented people, like super talented peers, right?
Yeah. Well, especially when you can go up against folks that are just as tall as he is, and I mean he's competing against pro players.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Ryan Hollins, right, from the Kings.
Yeah,
so it's always good.
Pan American Games, that's it.
Yeah.
So and Vince Edwards tried out for this team, the team that Swanigan was on the World Championships, and it looked like he made every cut except the last one. And yeah. For that, for a player like Edwards, who's not the most skilled, who's not the most talented, not the most athletic, for him to make it that far, like even, you know, even I was surprised. Like I thought he'd be out, you know, he was kind of a, you know, Painter helps out with the team, so let's get his guys an extra tryout, right? But from everything that it sounded like he was hitting every shot from the perimeter. He just wasn't, you know, on par with some of these number one pick, like, you know, top 10, 2017 guys.
Well, you said that, you know, the forward positions are pretty crowded.
Yeah. So. And so, but it's great to see that, you know, three cornerstones of this team are getting international experience and three not Hammonds or Davis. Yeah, because I don't think either one of us is concerned with Hammonds or Davis. Yeah. But you know, the other three who could be, you know, or who will be in large, like getting large chunks of the minutes. It's great to see them, you know, get that kind of stuff. So it's awesome. Like Team USA has definitely been good. And this summer has definitely been a good summer for Purdue.
Yes, absolutely. Can't this experience definitely helps.
You know who this summer hasn't been good for?
Who is that, Anish?
The Indiana Pacers.
Ooh, I disagree with you there, but let's continue.
All right. So you can probably turn off the podcast if you're not an NBA fan right now, but give it a chance if you're not. Like, it's fun. It's super fun.
We're talking to you, Dad.
Due to a slightly unforeseen technical glitch, this little beautiful transition we had between the Purdue section of the podcast and the NBA section was deleted, but thankfully it was the perfect part because all I said was we're about to talk NBA, so if you don't like the NBA, well, give it a chance, but if you don't, I understand. We're glad you made it this far. Subscribe on iTunes. Give us a 3, 4, 5 star review. If you give us a 1-star review, yeah, we'd rather not have your review. But go to the Boiled Sports Podcast Network, boiledsports.com, Anish Swami on Twitter, or The Railroad Tie on Twitter. Thank you for listening. But if you like NBA stuff, and if you like the Pacers, I'd just listen. Or if you like Inside Out, the Pixar movie, I would suggest you listen. But thank you for making it this far. But non-roll year, I can remember. For any like Pacers team. So like last February, they were the best team in the league and then everything collapsed and then Lance Stephenson left and then Paul George broke his leg and then George Hill got injured and then David West left and Roy Hibbert was traded. So yeah.
You know, I don't think it's that bad because I don't know. So Greg Doyle in this Star, either Monday or Tuesday, said that he thought that the ceiling for this Pacers team was the fourth seed in the West.
That's insane.
Which I think is insane. And I think, in fact, I know that people are going to disagree with me. And if certain people on Twitter are listening to this, I know I'm going to get some hateful tweets about it. But I don't think this is a playoff team. And I don't think it was a playoff team with Hibbert and West either. So
I think with Hibbert, West, and like even 70% of Paul George, I think it was a playoff team, but it was like the sixth seed. Because you scroll through the East, barring any injuries, which you have to do, it's Cavs, Bulls, Hawks, Wizards, Raptors,
yeah,
are pretty much a lock. I'd put the Bucks as a lock, you know, getting Greg Monroe. Getting Greg Monroe, like stealing him from the Lakers and the Knicks, like that's crazy. But that's six teams that are pretty much like inked in the playoffs. Oh, and the Heat. I mean, like if the Heat stay healthy, I think their starting five is almost better than any. Like they have depth issues and health issues, but their starting five is almost better than anybody else in the league, or than, you know, any of the second tier teams of the league. And they got friggin' Justice Winslow because Pat Riley gets everything.
Right.
But that's 6-7 locks for the playoffs. And that eight seed is going to be fought for again by the Celtics, the Nets, the Pacers. The Pistons will be better. The Magic will be better.
I think the Magic are going to make a jump this year.
I bought Orlando Magic stock when what's his name from IU? Oladipo was drafted. I was like, that's going to be a fun team with Vucevic and Oladipo. Yeah. And then now they got Peyton and Aaron Gordon. And I love Mario Hezonja. I don't know how much international stuff you follow, but that dude is the gunneriest gunner like ever.
He is J.R. Smith, the Croatian J.R. Smith.
He's incredible. But I think they're going to be pretty good and like push for maybe 35 wins. And if they even overshoot that a little bit, they're in the playoff hunt. I mean, that's how bad the East is. So I think all those teams are better than the Pacers right now. That's pretty much not really too much of a question. Also, Celtics just grabbed David Lee, and I think the internet has kind of overcorrected too much, you know, on David Lee. Mm-hmm. I think he's a super skilled offensive player, and he can get you buckets. And he's not a good defensive player, and he doesn't shoot threes. So obviously the analytics movement hates him. But I think like with Brad Stevens and with what he got out of that craptastic Celtics squad, I think that's, you know, a borderline playoff team again. So I don't know. I think this Pacers team is going to be really bad, like really bad.
And I think that Miles Turner is not going to produce a ton in his rookie year. I think he's a project, a long-term guy. If he becomes something, we'll see. So
I'm really trying not to get super excited based on Summer League. Like Summer League is glorified open gym.
Don't even like Summer League.
I'm a junkie, man. I have Summer League.
Summer League means nothing. It means less than nothing.
If you can be a center that can protect the rim and shoot threes, like there aren't like you can't count like five of those in the league right now. And I agree with you. I wasn't excited when the Pacers drafted him. But now I'm pretty okay, especially like considering the other options that were available to him. I mean, Trey Lyles, Cameron Payne, Kelly Oubre, Devin Booker. Like those are the other guys in that range. And I was like, Miles Turner is the best out of those, those options. And he gives you the option of trading Roy, but that's the thing. Like Hibbert was traded for basically the right to overpay Rodney Stuckey and a second round pick, you know, and maybe we'll get like Nick Young out of it or
Swaggy P.
I know. Or like Jordan Hill or, you know, Ryan Kelly or some other garbage power forward.
So, I think that this Pacers team it's frustrating because, but it's another rebuild, right?
Yeah, I mean,
do you want to compete for the sixth seed in the East, or do you want to try to put together a championship caliber team?
Well, and this kind of transitions into the whole impetus for this podcast between us. Larry does not believe in rebuilding any other way. This is how Larry rebuilds. Like, if you remember the 08 Pacers with Travis Diener, shout out to Travis Diener, wherever he is. Like, they made the 6, 7, 8, 9 seed for like 4 or 5 years, like Danny Granger and a bunch of trash. And then slowly stockpile, like, kept hitting in the draft. And that's how they got this team. Oh, I forgot we traded Danny Granger too. That was another trash move.
He was done.
Yeah, but for it's just like the David Lee move that the Warriors did not make this summer, this trade deadline. They could have traded it, like, by the time February rolled around, Draymond Green had already taken the place in the starting lineup. But if you traded Draymond, or if you traded David Lee in the middle of the season, the chemistry changes and you're already, like, the sum is greater than the parts, right? Or whatever that saying is. And it's Larry got overconfident, which is Larry, and messed with the chemistry and brought in freaking Evan Turner.
Well, so that was 2014, right?
Was that 20? Yeah, no. Yeah. Like, that's what I'm like from.
Oh, you're talking about from the heights of where this team was to the.
Yeah. From the Pacers and the Blazers being the two best, like, you know, units in the league to now both teams are rebuilding. The
Blazers right now.
I know, it's super sad.
In a steaming pile of garbage.
Well, they both have borderline superstars. I don't think Lillard is a superstar, but I think he's very good. And I'm not convinced Paul comes back at the superstar level that he was, like, after shattering his leg in half.
I mean, I think that's a wait and see. He's definitely not going to be scoring, you know, averaging 30 points through the first half of this next season. I mean, it's going to take some time.
And the problem is the 2016 draft class looks to be bad. Like, I mean, looks to be like pretty bad. Especially when you get shallow.
I mean, this was the class, right?
Yeah, or this or 2017. Oh. Like, these are, or last year. Like, those three were and are supposed to be some great, like, lottery stack teams, but or lottery stack, like, lineups, but next year is supposed to be kind of weak. And that might be why Hammonds came back, right? I mean, like, if Hammonds has a good year, like, maybe you take the proven, you know, 7-footer, you know, early in the second round if you can, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
it, that calculus kind of made sense to me. Whereas, you know, if you look at the last pick in the first round this year, like, the last picks were like RJ Hunter, Kevon Looney. Like, these kids can play.
Man, like, I'm a huge RJ Hunter fan.
Yeah,
I look at him and I see Kyle Korver.
Like, he's
so good.
With more swag. Like, he's gone to Brad Stevens, who knew him since he was a kid. So RJ Hunter's dad, the Georgia State coach, used to be IUPUI's coach for like 20 years.
Yep.
And he coached George Hill.
Yep.
And, you know, RJ Hunter, growing up in Indianapolis, was going to go to IUPUI. Until, you know, his dad left IUPUI and went to Georgia State and he followed his dad. But Brad Stevens was like, whenever you get sick of your dad, you know, Butler's waiting for you.
Right.
So I think, you know, that's a perfect fit. And so, you know what I mean? Like, there was no chance that AJ was going in the first round this year. It was doubtful that he would go in the, you know, the second round, first half of the second round either. So I think next year, because it's a weaker draft, you'll see his stock rise a little bit. But yeah, I don't like this Pacers rebuild. Like, it's not a good, I don't like, like, I would rather tank. Like, I would rather just tank it out and not make the playoffs. Like, basically the opposite of what the Celtics did this year. So the Celtics got the Celtics, like, fought to make the playoffs and were swept unceremoniously by LeBron.
Right.
And their reward for that was the 16th pick instead of the 10th.
Right.
And given hindsight, Justice Winslow fell to the 10th pick. Right. And the Celtics were the ones trying to trade 6 draft picks
yes.
to Charlotte to grab Justice Winslow. Like,
for the number 9 pick. Yep.
So was that playoff experience with players who probably won't be on your team when it's going to be good? Like, is that playoff experience worth it? I don't think so.
Yeah.
Like, as opposed to getting Justice Winslow and pairing him with Marcus Smart and Isaiah Thomas and all these, you know, all of those guys that they have that are good, and Winslow could be the star. It's like, come on. Like, I would rather, like, if there's no hope in this, like, if there's no hope in competing for a title, or even competing for a title is stupid. Like, competing for a conference, you know, championship berth, I'd say tank, but you can't even tank next year because it's trash.
I think the Pacers are in a rough spot. Now, the good thing about the Pacers is that they don't have a ton of money allocated over the next couple of years, but that kind of that doesn't really help them too much because the cap is going to explode, right?
Yeah, everybody's going to have money next year.
Everyone's going to have money, and it's going to be, and a lot of the sort of second tier stars have been locked up, are taken, you know, even like Kevin Love signed like a 4-year or a 3-year with the player option. Or maybe it was a 4-year with a 5th player option.
I think it was 4 with a 5, 4 plus 1. Like, Milwaukee had the right idea, is that Milwaukee's not going to get any, you know, big time free agents in 2016. Right. So they might as well throw a max offer at somebody and leverage the fact that Jason Kidd is a good coach. Somehow, like, improbably, Jason Kidd is a good coach. That team is really young, really promising, and in the East, which means that it's guaranteed a playoff spot, you know, and you might as well get your guy this summer instead of having to compete with everybody in the NBA next year.
Who's gonna have a max contract now turns into a very manageable contract in 2 years.
Yeah, exactly.
So, yeah, no, I think the Pacers are in kind of a rough spot. And
this whole Paul George at the 4 thing is a really bad, especially after coming off of a shattered leg. Like, it's a really bad idea.
Oh, man. I love him at the 3 because he's such a huge mismatch against, you know, every other 3 in the league.
That's why I really like the Monte Ellis signing. I mean, like, Monte for $11 million in the current market, a steal, like an absolute steal. Yeah. He can't play defense, or he can't play like ultra defense. But George Hill is one of the best point guard defenders, like, or guard defenders out there. So you put George on the point guard, you put George Hill at the point guard, you put Paul George at the other talented wing. And you can hide Monte Ellis, who's a good enough team defender. Like, he can stay in front of people and whatever.
Right.
But then giving seven for guaranteeing 3 years to Rodney Stuckey, who's basically a worse version of Monte Ellis. Like, I don't get that. We got CJ Miles already. Like, we didn't spend on the front court either. I don't know.
I think we're in for a rough couple of years. What kills me about it is I think we're gonna just burn right through Paul George's prime.
Exactly like Danny Granger.
Yes.
Exactly. You know, and I was having, you know, somebody asked me tonight whether I would mind or I wouldn't mind an Amari signing. You know, like, just do a 2-year deal or whatever.
Wait,
or a one. Yeah.
What?
So I don't, no. I have such a soft spot for Amari that maybe that's clouding it, but.
No. Amari Stoudemire.
Yeah, dude, 25 minutes a game.
How much are you going to give him? $4 million?
Like 6. We'll probably have to give him a little more than he's worth. That's the problem. He'll go to someone like Houston for cheap, but he won't come to Indianapolis for cheap. Like, you know, he's coming to Indy and he's going to demand a starting position and, you know, a decent amount of money. So
I think he's a broken toy. I don't know if you want to commit any sort of, I mean, you're filling out a roster maybe, but what does he give you? His knees are gone.
Basically. He gives you scoring. He gives you somebody who can actually, like, legitimately bang in the post as opposed to Paul. Compared to Paul, I think, you know, Amari's a better option. You re-sign Scola for cheap. And then we have Jan. We have Damo Rudej, who's a legitimate stretch four if he can make three pointers, right? Yeah. You have Miles Turner. You can bring Miles Turner up a little, you know, slower.
The problem with a guy like Stoudemire is that he still thinks that he is all-star.
Yeah. Yeah.
The role for him would be come in 4 or 5 million, hold down the starting spot, or like be the guy that helps bring a guy like Turner along a little bit. And he's not interested in that. I don't think I don't mean that to say that he's a selfish player. His abilities that he's like, I've got knee problems, but I'm okay. I'm going to go out. I'm still a 20-10 potential guy.
I can't blame him. He was on top of the world for how many years, you know? Like he was one of the three best players in the league for, you know, maybe 2 years there when he was playing with the Suns, like playing with Nash, right?
Yeah.
Like one of the 3 to 5 best players in the league. Like I think him and Nash were like what Blake and Chris Paul are now. I don't know. I just don't see any other option. Like we bring back Scola. Like Scola is almost certainly coming back. And I don't know if I'm, you know, if I'm happy or like depressed making that statement. Jordan Hill
is if he and Ellis are out on the court at the same time, you've got two non-defenders.
Yep. And Jan is a good, Jan will be a good rim protector. Paul George and George Hill will be great on the perimeter. But yeah, it's like, you know, everybody's committed to this new style that we've never seen play, right? Like the Pacers didn't even experiment with running fast at all. Like, so we've never seen this. So I don't know how they're expecting it to work or whatever.
I don't know if Vogel is a up-tempo kind of coach either.
He's not an offensive coach. Like he should have hired like Melvin Hunt, someone right. like him, like brought on an assistant instead of Popeye Jones and his weird ears, like not doing anything on the bench. It's him and Nate McMillan Vogel and Nate McMillan are on the bench, like crafting the defense and doing stuff like that, but they can't coach offense. Like, I mean, it's pretty obvious right now.
I'm thinking of Thibodeau when I think of Vogel from a skills as a coach standpoint.
Yeah, I agree. And I would actually rather have Frank because he's got interpersonal skills and, like, you know, motivation and, you know, humanness.
Right. Not everyone who encounters him hates him.
Yeah. And he's got, I think, just as good of a defense, like a defensive scheme. He's just as good of a, you know, defensive coach. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I don't. This is really weird. Like it looked like Larry just watched the finals and was like, I want that team.
I think, yeah. And they're not really set up for that. And the thing about that too, is you're in that case, you're sort of chasing someone else's success and it's going to take you years to get there because the roster is not set up for that right now. So what happens, you know, in 4 years when you kind of have the pieces together, you know, and the league moves to something else. Are you innovating on your own or are you just trying to copy what other people are doing and hoping it works for you too?
I think it's the latter, and it's, you know, a main reason why Golden State could do what they did is because they have Steph Curry for $11 million.
Oh my God.
Steph Curry and DeMarcus Cousins are on the two, you know, most friendly, team-friendly contracts in the NBA.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's a big part of it. And that way you can afford to max somebody like Draymond Green. You can afford to max somebody like Klay Thompson and keep your core together. You can afford to let a $15 million player like David Lee just sit on the bench and, like, rot, right? But I don't know. I mean, like, they're going to be good. Last thing, no, you got to go. David West gave up $13 million to take a $1.4 million contract playing with Tim Duncan and LaMarcus Aldridge and Tony Parker and Popovich down in San Antonio.
Good for him. I wish him the best of luck. David, the one thing that sort of the tie that binds with David Lee's career is that he doesn't care.
You David West.
Yeah, with David West. I'm sorry. With David West, he doesn't care.
Like, yeah.
He makes his own decisions completely, seemingly outside of any influence from any third party.
Mm-hmm.
And his, you know, and his interests might not align completely with what people traditionally think of as, you know, someone, I mean,
an NBA player. Yeah.
I mean, this guy says he wants to win and backs it up by signing a veterans minimum contract with one of the maybe three or four teams that could win a title next year.
Yeah. And he has repeatedly stated that after his NBA career, he wants to teach high school history.
Mm-hmm. He doesn't care.
What?
Yeah. No, he really doesn't care. He's not going to feed you BS. He's always been super upfront with the media. And, you know, he is who he is. He shows himself to be who he is. And, you know, I think that's an admirable quality. I think the divorce from the Pacers was kind of rough.
He didn't like the way Larry, I mean, I think it was beyond that. Like, I think he just couldn't stand, you know, another year of cashing checks and not competing, like not being relevant. Right.
Right. He knows that he has like at most 3 years, and that's really, he's got two.
Mm-hmm.
and he doesn't want to spend it winning, you know, 30 games a season.
Yep. And babysitting and being, you know, whatever, like whatever he is, whatever he was in Indiana. I have bought two jerseys of like current NBA players, like in their time. Cool. I bought Reggie Miller.
Yep.
I bought two Reggie Miller jerseys, one Flo-Jo and one the pinstripe. Yes. And I bought a David West jersey. I bought it 2013. A gold David West jersey. Like,
you're a grown man now. What are you doing wearing?
I wear it to the games and stuff like that. Yeah. I wore it in Boston when I was good, like during the playoff games.
You wear like a t-shirt underneath it, or do you go bare?
Oh, no. T-shirt. Like, you can't pit out. Like, unless you're at a, like on a beach or like in swim trunk, like anything where you're in a swimsuit. Out a lot
lately and just really need some validation for your effort.
Listen, man, sun's out, guns out. Like, I've been doing some curls, man. Come on. Yeah. Let me show it off a little bit.
There you go.
David West is my favorite non-Reggie Pacer, and it's incredible. Like, he's the best. He's got an X tattoo, like Xavier tattoo, that says "My life, my way."
Oh, that's
like, that dude. Yeah.
He didn't care. He does his thing.
I hope they win. Yeah, I mean, like, I hope, you know, San Antonio or Cleveland. Honestly, I hope, you know, they do it. Like, one of them does it, or they meet in the finals. That'd be amazing.
That'd be fun. I have a friend who hates the Spurs.
I don't know how you can do that.
He's a huge NBA fan, but he hates the Spurs. But I would love to see a Spurs Cleveland final, and I'd love to see Cleveland win it.
And then
next year.
Yeah, for sure.
And then sometime in the 2020s or 2030s, maybe the Pacers will pick up the championship.
When the next LeBron James or Michael Jordan can come along and ruin our dreams every year.
Yeah, well, as a child, my dreams were ruined by Patrick Ewing.
Oh, shout out to, yeah. The 30 for 30. Did you want, you? I mean, I assume you've seen the 30 for 30.
Like about a half dozen times.
It's my favorite movie. It's, it caused my brother to change all of his passwords to like Reggie Miller. Really. So my brother is 5 years younger than I am. Okay. So he relied on all of his Reggie Miller. Like, he only saw really like the 2000 and beyond Reggie Miller. Mm-hmm. And he relied on all of these like folk stories that I would tell him from my formative days. But like, after seeing that movie, like, I cried. Like, I was on spring break when that movie came out, and I made everybody go back to the room and we watched it in silence, and I cried.
I turned it into an event. like I had all the lights off in my apartment. I bought special food. I turned my phone off. I don't know where my wife was. And I watched it, and it was the greatest. It was amazing.
It was my childhood. I mean, like, that was my childhood. Yeah. Like, that entire movie, it was amazing. Anyway.
It was Yeah, and then they had to throw in that Larry Johnson 4-point play at the end. That was a great 30 for 30.
It's one of my favorite. Like, it's one of my favorite non-serious 30 for 30. Like, they're the two Escobars or whatever. Like, the I forgot that one. But, like, there are a bunch of, like, serious 30 for 30s that are really, like, legitimately good movies. Yeah. And this was just super fun. Like, this was, like, a really fun, like, sports are just sports, like, documentary.
I'll tell you my favorite part of that before we head off the air. My favorite part was, surprisingly, it made me like John Starks for a second, because I hated John Starks. Like, I wanted him to fall into a pit of fire. But he gets up there and he talks about his blown free throws. And I don't know, like, it humanized them to the point where I'm like, all right, I can get behind John Starks.
Did this dude just did this?
Yes.
I say that all the time. I think I say that once a week. I love that movie. I might watch that movie now. I think my girlfriend's asleep. I might, like, pour some whiskey and watch that movie.
That sounds good. You know what? Next time we're in the same town, let's just rent out a movie theater. Yes,
I agree.
You and I can just watch it.
Oh, my God. We'd have to be in separate corners, though, because, you know, there'd be action down south that I might not want to share with another person. But
nope, I'm sitting right next to you. Just you and me.
Hey, last second recommendation. I saw it on my birthday. Go see Inside Out. Fantastic movie. Yeah. Super adult. Like a very adult.
That's what I heard.
Yeah. Like, you, it's definitely like kids can see it and enjoy like the silliness, but like it is definitely like a, you start to question everything you've believed in your entire life, like, movie. It's awesome. It's great. I love it. Pixar is like up there with like Toy Story and Up for me. I love that movie. Anyway.
All right. I'll check it out.
That's all I got.
And thus concludes the Pixar basketball beat.
That's right.
That's right. I'm Michael.
I don't know. I'm Anish.
You're Anish. All right. Thanks for listening if you made it this far.
We love you guys.
On BoiledSports.com and on iTunes.
Thank you. At The Railroad Tie, at Anish Swami.
Anish Swami on Twitter, on the Twitters.
I've missed you, Mike.
I've missed you too.